Welcome to Drukhama Radio. For the sake of clarity, the person referred to as Raz in these podcasts is one of the main teachers of Drukhama teachings, referred to more commonly as Daishi, which simply means old teacher. We hope you enjoy this free content and find some of the material useful to enhance your life and the lives of those around you. Blessings.
Welcome back to Drukhama Radio. My name's Adam. Blessed again to be joined tonight by Roz. Roz, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. You sound like you're doing good, and I'm excited to delve into what surprise topic you have for us, as usual.
That's right. Pulling out of a bag. They all come down. You know, we cover a lot of stuff. It's going to be a brighter topic this week. We are going to discuss happiness, bliss, the idea of vibrating at that peak level. While you're on the spiritual path, we're going to break this into two parts because you can go very esoteric with this, and we are going to stay on the game of life side of this right now. We're going to stay, while you're on the path, it can be a very heavy weight, right? There can be a lot of things going on that almost are overwhelming, and we're going to talk about maintaining that bliss, seeking that bliss, that happiness, vibrating at that peak level today on the kind of personal front, for lack of a better term, and then next week get into the esoteric, actually finding bliss on the path. Does that sound good?
I'm a pretty happy guy, so I love this topic. Thanks for throwing this at me. This will be a nice touch compared to where we went last week, a little heavy.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it got a bit. And thank you for everybody who listened. We had a ton of new listeners last week, so thank you very much. A lot of really good responses. So let's jump right into it. Happiness, smile, bliss, that upper vibration level where everything is perfect. And you feel like you're just swimming around, you know, almost back in a womb, right? So I guess the broadest question that I can come up with is, happiness in general, obviously there are varying degrees of that, but why is that something that is so important to us? And is it shaped more around perception than reality? Or are there more dependent factors?
Again, you know, what a big subject. So happiness, there's a lot of terms that we use to define what we call this vibration. Blissfulness, rapture, glee, happiness. It can even be contentment, right? Contentment may be blissful to some people. Really what it is, it's an emanation of a vibration that feels comfortable, cozy, secure. There's no fear there. There's no aberrations of the mind have stopped. The emotions have become balanced in this one state, and the physical body feels really good. So you have chemicals going on in the physical body. You have emotional stability in the emotional body. You have the mental undulation stopping. And then we end up being in this contented state. It's exactly why people go after drugs too, because it's simulating that state for just a small amount of time. And of course the crash is bad, but you know, people go after it for that very reason. Why are we searching for it? Well, obvious, you know, it's a wonderful state. It's a wonderful feeling. It makes us relate with others better. It makes us relate with our own life better. It makes us relate with ourselves better. So joy or blissfulness is where a human being feels most comfortable. And that's because the light in its purest form is just an exuberant blissfulness. It doesn't express itself in any other way. So we're longing for that consistent blissful feeling. And of course, in our current condition, we don't have that because there's always rhythms. There's always ups and downs. There's always things that lift us close to that. You know, we have that great orgasmic lift and then the crash after. And that cycle repeats itself throughout our lives, emotionally, mentally, physically. And it isn't the state that the human soul or spirit wants to exist in. It inherently feels wrong. It inherently doesn't feel right. So the benefit or purpose of having that happen to us is that we seek. It stirs us up so that we inevitably get to the point where we're like, God, why can't I grab and hold on to this happy? Why can't I just hold on to this happy? And that is an important thing because it has us grow. It has us, like I said, search and has us seek.
A couple things that I pulled out of that I want to touch on. One of the words that you used was talking about orgasmic. This is something we've talked about before in the show, but I want to kind of pivot back to this. So much of happiness, for a lot of adults does arise from that physical connection. And we can go several different ways about that. But I'm just going to ask you, why is that important to feeling good?
You know, it's funny, you mentioned perception. So sometimes the initiate student goes through a little practice where they will take music or art or food or, you know, a flower or something that smells good, and they'll use one of their senses to test whether or not the object actually delivers the positive, blissful sensation or the positive kind of sensation, or whether it's the mind producing it. And the way to do that is to, I'll tell them to put on music that you love and let yourself go in it, right? Lose yourself in the music and you'll experience ecstasy and bliss or happiness or joy or whatever kinds of emotions the music gives you. And then I want you to use your mind to stop that and see the music as being just the one instrument, or break the music down so that you can see it in its parts. And you'll notice that the feeling behind it goes away. Same music, same ears, same vibration, but a completely different emotional response. And it proves to the practitioner that that's generated, all of that's generated within through perception. And this is really important to see, because if we understand that we're generating it through ignorance, we're pointing to the thing out there and saying it's responsible. But when we realize we're generating it, then we can start to gain some control over it. And that's the important part of that practice.
So an initiate comes in. They begin the process, and the first few months are heavy on that entanglement, right? You're shedding those layers almost like a snake sheds its skin. It can be an incredibly lonely time. And I can't speak for anyone else. I can only speak from personal experience, because things that you thought were real evaporate, and you learn that things aren't what you thought they were, but they haven't yet been replaced. So you're just left empty. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I guess that's kind of vague, or maybe I'm not doing a very good job of describing it, but there are some dark darks in that first few months. And it's a real reflection period where you're doing a lot of internalizing, and internalizing sucks initially. It's awful, yeah. Because it's so much easier to be able to project outwards. So maybe just riff about that a little bit. And, you know, and again, so speak to me, you know, why was that so tough?
I think you said, you're not saying it right. I think you said it perfectly. I mean, the way that you described it, the vacuum that's created by us seeing things for what they truly are, that's not a bad thing, but it can certainly feel very bad because we don't know what to connect with. It's exactly what you said. What replaces this thing I've just lost or seemingly lost, right? In essence, we haven't lost anything, but in the beginning, it feels like we're losing a lot. But the losing is important, because the stuff we're clinging to through entanglement is the thing that's insulating us from actually achieving pure unification with that light or that energy or the consciousness, whatever we want to call it. So really, in our truest state, we're connected. We're already there. We already have it. We're already, you know, ready to receive it. There's no actions that need to be taken. But because we insulate ourselves with the illusion and ignorance of the attachment and entanglement to all the outside things, we turn the light down, or we dim the light, or we cause the light to be not as strong as it should be in our consciousness. And because of this ignorant entanglement, as we start shedding this, as you said, it feels like losing. Because to the ego, it's like, wait a minute, we're letting things go and we're not gaining anything in replace of that. And so to the ego's binary kind of mind, it says, no, we're only minusing. And that's bad. And this is negative. And we need to be gaining, because the ego sees everything as an accounting system. If I let something go, I better get two back, or it's not positive. But in a spiritual pursuit, it's a letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go continuously. And in fact, it feels worse and worse and worse through that process until we arrive at the other side of the shore and realize that I had to have all of that let go so I could accept or realize, which is the word we're looking for in terms of the success process, if there is one, is to realize the true nature of things. And I couldn't do that under the blanket of the ignorant entanglements I had with all the outside things. So you're right, it's dark and it can feel very lonely and it can feel very meaningless, or that the purpose is wrong and the ego will trick you into believing that you're moving backwards and you can't be making progress doing this and that something's got to be wrong. All of that contributes to a very dark kind of space. And it's one of the reasons you need others around you and or a very good teacher who's been there before, and they can help you get through that period. It doesn't have to always be dark, but sometimes it's necessary to experience that, and you come out much stronger on the other end. But you're right, it can seem that way.
I had a couple thoughts about what you said. The first was kind of an analogy. I guess I equate it to knowing what art is and knowing how to paint. So we understand that things aren't necessarily what we had perceived them as, and that we need to make these moves and follow this path to get where we want to go. But we don't know how to paint yet. So being able to identify it isn't unilaterally understanding or having a full inclusive knowledge of it. So that's where that vacuum is, right?
It's absolutely right. So what we have to remember is that what happens under the surface is that, and we're unconscious to it, is that the mind is creating, or the egoic mind stream, the egoic identity, and there are parts there. There's the memory, the senses, the intellect, the ego. They're all separate parts, but they work in unison together and convince us that all of those things, even though there's dependent origination, all of those things are one thing, and that's me. You know, Jim Linson is the combination of those things as one. But in fact, it's not the case. As we start to notice and see, which is the whole point of the path, is to recognize the error there, we notice that it's creating stories. And those stories are basically dictating to me whether I'm happy or sad. Now, that's a terrible way to live, because the soul or the experiencer behind everything is being duped the whole time into states that are controlled by the outside influences. I mean, this system is controlling things. So I look at one thing and I say, oh, you know, that's a terrible situation, and I feel depressed and sad and lonely because of these things. Again, an outside story has been generated from an occurrence that happened in the macrocosm, or the outside area of my life. And then on the other side, I see something that's presented to me and a story's wrapped around it that happens to be positive, or at least it's what it's telling me, and I agree to it. Oh, that's fantastic, and I'm excited, and all. Both of those are neutral in truth. It's just the stories that are created that I buy into. They dictate to me, and again, unconsciously, whether I'm happy or sad. So in an initiate place, in terms of that part of that, I have to start seeing that clearly. I have to recognize when I'm being duped by the egoic mind stream, and I have to see it and say, it's building a story. There's the story. Okay, I see it. And I have to back away, back away, back away. And this isn't a place for me to try to achieve blissfulness and try to achieve these great states of ecstasy. That comes. But right now, as an initiate, my job is to make a separation and move away from, so that I can see that process happening. Because of that, it's rough, because I'm letting go of the story, but I'm also letting go of the fun and excitement and happiness that comes with the story too. So I'm getting hit double. So it feels like I'm just losing all around. Really what's happening is the initiate is making incredible gains. They're actually moving closer and closer to that barrier. But from the egoic perspective, which still exists and is entangled to some degree unconsciously, it feeds us another story that thinks it's not good. It can't be good. It's got to be bad. And therefore, I start adopting that as I'm making space, because it still has control over me to some extent. It's still working on me. I haven't mastered that yet. And it's very slick. It's really clever, and it's built to challenge us. So during that space, it can feel lonely, miserable, dark, and you need somebody there that actually can help you get through it the right way and get you to the other side of the shore.
One final question, and then a comment or story that I wanted you to just discuss briefly. And I'm going to start with the comment or story, and then I'll ask you the final question, because I think that will be a really good way to kind of sum everything up, put a button on it.
Adam, let me just ask you too. Also, if we can finish that schedule with a practical application, I think that will help too. Someone could take something away from this that can actually put into motion. Yeah?
You read my mind. That was going to be the question. So the commoner story is, I remember you sending me the parable about the man in India's house had burned down, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. And he'd lost everything, and he went back the next day and it was in ashes. And all of this, you know, huge mansion, all kinds of things that he owned, his entire life wrapped up in this monstrosity, not in a negative way, but I mean, just this huge, giant house. It's all gone. And he pulls out a few trinkets that were left unharmed, you know, gold hairbrush, you know, whatever it might be, takes three or four things with him, goes home, and it's just an unbelievable morning. And then it occurs to him, you know, how much these things have ownership over him. And he goes and burns them, if I'm remembering this correctly, and then feels free for the first time in his life. Yes?
Yeah, he's finally seeing that the problems were created by the stuff. And it's not necessarily the stuff there. It's not the things, it's the entanglement to the things. So have a nice car, have a nice house, have a nice life, but make sure the entanglements are not there. The story isn't there. Don't believe that the house is you and you're the reflection of the money and the cars. And just understand that it's something that you have each moment by moment, and enjoy them if you want, enjoy them if it fills you up. But it's the entanglements that's the problem. And that's something the initiate needs to get away from and notice and be able to cut away. Not the actions, not the speech, not the feelings, not the mental. We don't want to war with mind. We don't want to war with emotions. We don't want to war with the body. We want the mind, the emotional body, and the physical body to be free to express itself however it needs to, without any coercion, without any control, because we're trying to get away from control. And now here, we don't want to now start enforcing control on the speech and on our dogmatic kind of beliefs and so on. We want everybody to just do what they want to do. If the body wants to feel sad, it's okay. But the awareness is perspective. The Atman or the soul or whatever we want to call that, it wants to be able to allow those things to happen without being sleepy, unconscious, and embedded in it. And that is a practice the initiate has to go through and understand and make separation from so that they're ready for the next step. So if they do that right, they don't need to be miserable, but there are times where they'll be challenged because a little story will creep up and that'll get them while they're sleeping and convince them that all of this loss is terrible, you know, and that can happen. But with the right support, it's easy to get through those times. One way to make it so that it's more pleasurable and happier experience is to always remind yourself that the very mind stream, the very egoic mind that creates these stories is the very thing that's caused the suffering and the slavery to begin with. It isn't the outside world. It's not your friend. It's not your mom. It's none of those things. It's that inner dialoguing. That dialoguing, although it will front itself as a friend to you, as somehow it's going to bring happiness, it's always in control. It's never up to you. It's going to dictate to you, oh, no, I'll bring you some good things, but they're going to be when I decide, and they're going to be the way I decide, and they're going to be the length that I decide. And I'm also going to bring you the bad things. I'm also going to tell you the bad stories. Once we realize this process is happening, we can let go of it completely. We can remain present, let go of the story, right? Just let it go and not have to deal with any of it. So even the bad story that the path is going wrong or that I'm losing all this stuff, all those stories can be let go. And instead we can reside in what is a perfect kind of ordinary awareness. Later it becomes extraordinary, but right now just an ordinary awareness where we're released from the burden of the damn stories that constantly play. And it makes us a better listener, a better partner, a better father, better mother, better brother, better friend. It makes us a better everything because we no longer are invested in any of the outcomes and we can be clear and be unbiased toward everything. And that's an important place for the initiate and any human being to be, where they're just not invested anymore in the stories because that person is now much wiser, much more clearer, much more fairer, and much more focused. That's a better place to start. And that's kind of the foundation that gets built by the initiate so that they're ready to go to that bigger, extraordinary awareness, that higher-minded kind of awareness where bliss does reign. But first house cleaning has to be done, to use your phrase.
Awesome stuff. And was that the practical application piece you were referring
to? No, I can tell you one. This is a simple way because I'm assuming that a lot of people are either starting the path or they're interested in it. But some of the gals and guys that have been on the path will probably be further away from this kind of practical application. But for those that are interested in just trying to make slight adjustments, it's really important that, and this helps in two ways. One, it makes you more focused in the now and the present and become more aware of what's happening underneath the surface. You will become more aware of your process and your vehicle, meaning the mind, the senses, the memories, the egoic emotions, the physical body. But for you to look at the incidents that come up in your life, the rhythms, when an event happens, and to be able to stop and get yourself to stop in that moment and say, let me witness the story really clearly and take a pause. You know, take a break. I used to travel to Asia quite a bit. And in the Asian communities, before you answer a question, to take a long pause is normal. It's just a normal thing that happens. It can be very uncomfortable. And I've seen many Americans and Westerners become very uncomfortable with that. But they're okay with just waiting a minute before answering and really processing and feeling and saturating themselves with the question or the comment. They might not use it the way they should be. Sometimes it's just done out of politeness. But what really needs to happen in that waiting period is for you to really feel, sense, and get a real good idea of the story being created. And look at the story and say, okay, what story is being painted? Because I don't want to just dive into whatever story the mind's given me. So take a second, look at the story, and then objectively see, am I really sure that that story is accurate? Do I really know all those things, the quote unquote facts being presented in that story, to be true? And should I buy into it? And is that going to be helpful for me and the other person? And that intuitive contemplation at first might be clunky, but after you get really good at that, you're going to find that happens within a millisecond. You'll be able to just step back, look, and say, okay, I picked apart this thing. I've kind of seen some benefits to it, and I've seen the bad parts of it. I'm only going to use the stuff that's healthy for me and the other person. And it makes you a really good contemplative processor. And that's really important to help you in all areas of your life, at work, in your relationships, with your family, with your friends. So just to step back and say, wait a minute, let me just look at the story I'm creating about what you just said or about what I just saw. And let me look at that story for a second. You'll be able to see most of the time the story is reactionary impulses. It's built up from the memories. Again, all those parts of your ego, the senses, the memory, the intellect, the ego side, will start throwing in their two cents and create this mishmash. Once you step back and see that, you're going to start being able to be more perceptive, more unbiased, and generally just have a much more healthier, happier life from that alone.
Amazing stuff, Ross, as always, but definitely amazing stuff. A really good topic. I'm excited, you know, to be honest, I'm excited for next week now, just diving into this as we get into a little bit more esoteric part of this. Again, thank you so much for taking time to be with us tonight.
Thank you, Adam. I appreciate it as always. I think I get so much email from this too, and I know it helps people. And if we just help one person, it's worth it. So I love it. I'm glad you do this, and I appreciate it as well.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So if you have questions, please feel free to email radio@drewkama.com. Don't forget to rate and review on iTunes. That really helps us be able to disseminate this to all the people who are wanting to hear this. Okay, well, once again, thank you for your time, brother. And we will talk to everybody next week. So until then, take care, everyone, and be well.
If you have enjoyed this podcast and wish to find out more information on these teachings, please come and visit us at our website, drukama.com. That's drukama.com.